Welcome to Catholic Answers Live, the program where you participate with your questions about apologetics and evangelization, including the most important theological, spiritual, moral, and social issues facing the world today. Call now with your question for today's guest, toll-free 1-888-31-TRUTH. That's 888-318-7884. Now, from San Diego, Catholic Answers Live.
Hello and welcome to Catholic Answers Live. It's Tuesday. That means open forum, 2 hours of open forum. Any question that you have on the Catholic faith, on Catholic life, on Catholic people, you want to know about Catholic stuff, today is your day, 888-318-7884. Whether you are Catholic or not, you are welcome to call, 888-318-7884. Our guest both hours today is Tim Staples, Director of Apologetics and Evangelization here at Catholic Answers, author of many things, including this book that I have right here, Behold Your Mother, A Biblical and Historical Defense of the Marian Doctrines. Hello, Tim Staples.
Hello, Cy Kellett. How are we doing?
You sound like a nurse. Have you been seeing a lot of nurses lately? Are we doing?
I tried to slip that in there, and then if you were to respond that, I would say, how do you know how I'm feeling?
I'm guessing you're feeling well, though. You look well. Are you feeling better?
I feel
making
fantastic.
Progress.
Yes, I am.
Right, you got the stamina and power to do 2 hours of answering questions about the Catholic faith.
I'm ready to rumble. The drugs have all worn off, so
I'm glad to hear that. I'm glad we were able to announce that on air. All the drugs have worn off. By the way, Tim recently had surgery. That's what that's about. In case you're driving in the car with the kids and they're like, "Wait
what?
A minute,
what?"
They were non-recreational. You're taking pain medicine and other medicine, right?
Yeah. Yes, and others.
And the pain has subsided.
Oh my goodness, I feel great.
So you're back to kickboxing?
I am ready to fight for the heavyweight championship of the world.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay, good for you. I'm glad to hear it. I actually believe with you that could be possible. Like with me, it's obviously a joke. No, Sai's not going to do any kickboxing, but I feel like you could do kickboxing. Did you ever try it?
I boxed.
Yeah, I know you.
But I didn't do the.
You didn't use your feet.
If I was a young man today, although I'm going to make some people mad at me, but I would be doing jiu-jitsu and getting ready for MMA. Did I say that? Now I'm going to get all the questions. That's immoral. You're wrong, Tim. Okay, well, I'd still be doing it. But I did. I boxed when I was a teenager. My plan was to box in the Marines when I went in.
Yeah.
And I was training for it, but Jesus intervened.
And
that's when I committed my life to Christ in the Assemblies of God, and my focus turned from the ring to the Bible.
Oh, that's wonderful. That's
good. I still toyed around with it a bit, but I just didn't have the desire to do that any longer. Uh-huh. I had a desire to do what I'm doing right now, tell people about Jesus.
So you're more of you're a verbal boxer.
That's it.
For Jesus now.
Amen.
Yeah. So
fighting the good
fight
of faith.
I am kind of curious about the MMA thing, though.
Yes. I started something.
No. Yeah, you did. Because there's, I mean, not all, but most sports involve varying levels of physical contact. Like, you know, I'm a basketball fan.
Yes.
Basketball is a rough sport. People don't realize
it
that.
It is.
It's a rough sport.
There's a reason why they wear mouthpieces.
Yeah, right. So, like, where in your mind have you ever thought, where's the line? Where's the line at which that's too much?
I am in the minority among Catholic theologians and such.
Really?
I am definitely more along the lines of the Father Flanagan, you know, Edward Flanagan, who started Boys Town.
Oh, right, yeah.
They had a boxing ring right in the middle.
Yeah.
And when boys had things, you get in there and bang heads for a little bit. I am totally in favor of that. I think boxing, I know this. I was a punky kid who thought he was tough, and the boxing ring helped me to learn respect.
Okay.
You get in there, and I remember the first time in the ring, I got bounced around by a guy that wasn't as large as I was. You know, uh-huh. I thought I was going to go in there, and I didn't know what I was doing. And it was a lesson, right?
Yeah, because it's the sweet science.
Sweet science. You learn, and you know, granted, I know folks, I've talked with some friends of mine, colleagues and such, that would say, yeah, but once you get on the professional level with boxing and MMA, it becomes, you know, this spectacle and immoral. I beg to differ. I believe we should be involved and we should be making it better. We should be involved. I think the idea of Christians exiting that. I mean, we're not the Coliseum. They're not fighting to the death. In fact, the rules are going the other way. Boxing, if you in the 19th century, there was no hold barred.
It was Jack Johnson and those guys.
Oh,
and,
my goodness. Yeah, you know, without even a little bit earlier than that, I mean, there was, you know, you could hit anywhere and you fought till somebody dropped and sometimes it'd be 100 rounds and all of that. And boxing went the other way, becoming more safe and more of the sweet science, as you said. And MMA has gone that way as well. I mean, it's starting to, because when it first started, before it was on the television screens and all that, as it is now,
brutal.
There were no rules. I mean, and they've instituted rules. It's become much better as far as more of a science. And I argue that it's really about excellence in defending yourself and such. I mean, these are the best of the best. And generally speaking, very respectful. I mean, folks from the outside looking in, you know, boxing is evil. Get in the ring. Go in there and see.
Nope.
I know some. Nope. I'm too old. But I'm telling you, I know folks on the inside who fight. And there's some very respectful, good Christian folks. And it's not, you know, I'm going to kill you. And the object is to... It really is, and it should be about excellence in self-defense.
Yeah,
and so I believe that we should move it in a more sane direction than where it is even now.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't agree with those who say we just run the other way. I believe if we're not there, then it's really going to get crazy, but we should be a positive influence. I know a lot of folks are going to disagree with me.
But that is one of those things you can. I mean, it's okay to disagree with you. But
it is. And Father Flanagan, if he were here today, now I know I've talked with priests and others who believe boxing, too, is just, you know, oh, you're actually hitting people in the face. It's like, come on, people. Yeah, you hit each other in the face. You know, we're not in heaven yet. We're on this side of the veil.
Yeah.
And you do those sorts of things when you're learning to defend yourself, and when you become really excellent at it, you become an icon of what this represents. And I think it's important. In fact, I argue every man, if you're going to be married, you should learn to defend yourself. You should be either taking martial arts, learning to box, learning to defend yourself, because you need to be able to defend your family. Now, I know people don't like it when I say that, and I say I don't care, because I do. I take seriously defending my – I have 7 kids. You come in my house, you're going to come through me to get to my 7 kids. That's just the way it is.
I always felt like I was prepared with comic barbs. I had a – I would make – I always felt that was a good defense, but maybe that was irresponsible of me. But I was always prepared with a one-liner. That was my
amen.
That's so interesting, though, because there's the other side of it. The other side of it too, because I'm interested in this. I don't feel like I have a dog in the fight, so to speak.
Yes,
because there's also the thing about risking your life and health,
right?
And many people have done that many men have done that down through the age. You know, like going into the mines or something. Well, there's the only way you could feed your family. So there's something about
the risks should be minimized. And when it comes to MMA, though, the idea of tapping out is a great thing. I mean, that is, you know, you don't choke a guy out. He taps out. Now, some guys are so tough that they hang in there and they end up getting choked out. You know, I mean, that happens. But it is a very humane system where you can just tap.
Right.
And it's over. Yeah. Right. And you got referees right there.
Well, let me go to the extreme sports where people just jump out of airplanes. A guy jumped out of an airplane with no parachute. Did you see this? And he landed in a net.
I thought that was Spider-Man.
No. Spider-Man has done it. But he has a certain set of skills.
Yeah.
I mean, that's particular set of skills.
That is another issue that you have to deal with. Like, as a father,
you can't do that, right?
Yeah, I can't do that. I've got a family that depends on me. I can't ride a motor. I don't believe I can ride a motorcycle morally. I don't think it's morally licit for me to do that because of the fact that I have a family. Now, that's me. There's not a teaching of the church, catechism, paragraph 2232, that says Tim Staples cannot ride a motorcycle. But I do believe that there are moral principles involved
fathers,
here.
Mothers, yeah.
Because I can't take that kind of risk.
Yeah, we used to jump off these cliffs in a quarry when we were kids.
Yeah.
And we tried to get my father to do it with us one time.
Yeah.
And he said 27 meals a day. Because he had seven kids, and yes. He said, I'm responsible for 27 meals a day.
There
I can't
go.
Get hurt jumping off a cliff. There's no...
That's good.
That would be improper, so to speak. Yes,
amen, brother.
Well, I'm glad it's interesting to talk about it with you. Lots of folks on the lines. If
yes.
you want to get on the line, 888-318-7884. Tim Staples is our guest both hours, and it's open forum. So any question that you have for Tim, you are welcome to call. And Chip, if you're out there, remember you called the other day and I kind of had to cut you off at the end. If you want to try again and have a more extensive conversation with Tim, that is welcome as well. 888-318-7884. We'll take a quick break. We'll be right back with more Open Forum with Tim Staples right after this.
Catholic Answers Live. We're here for you.
The leading Catholic voices are on EWTN Radio.
I would describe myself as a revert, and ever since I came back to a practice of my faith, I started praying the rosary, going to even daily mass, God has led me on an amazing journey and used me in a lot of incredible ways that I never dreamed would have been possible, and I'm just so grateful to God for all of his gifts and blessings in my life.
Take Two with Jerry and Debbie, tomorrow, noon Eastern, on EWTN Radio.
Catholic Answers Live is brought to you in part by CatholicSingles.com, the website for Catholics who want to meet others who share their Catholic values for faith, fellowship, and love. You can learn more at CatholicSingles.com. Catholic Answers Live thanks CatholicSingles.com for their generous support.
Homeschool Connections, an online provider of courses for your Catholic homeschool, is a sponsor of Catholic Answers Live. Homeschool Connections website is homeschoolconnections.com.
Call now with your question, 888-318-7884. This is Catholic Answers Live.
Tim Staples, our guest this hour. Next hour, Tim Staples is our guest. That means 2 good hours of open forum today. Tim wasn't at the conference last year. You never showed up. We were all waiting for you. You never showed up because of some health issues.
Minor little thing.
Yeah, but you're coming back this year, right?
Oh,
you come
man.
To the big conference?
I cannot wait, my friend, because I'm going to – I know I have a certain time allotted, but I'm taking more than what they gave me to make up for
shocked.
Last year.
I'm shocked to hear that.
I'm joking.
Tim's going to go along. That is a shocking development. our president here, Chris Cech.
Yes.
He had dinner this weekend with Cardinal Burke.
Yes, he did.
And Cardinal Burke's, at least I'm told, I don't know, is all fired up about coming to the conference and
Fantastic.
Giving the keynote address. That's going to be exciting. And you got the thing about I should say about Cardinal Burke, though, it's the keynote address will be delivered at the banquet, which is if you buy the whole conference ticket. You can also
right.
buy, I don't know, maybe single day tickets or something like that. But you go to CatholicAnswersConference.com. It's September 27th through the 30th. Right near the ocean over there in La Jolla.
Beautiful.
At the
one of the most beautiful beaches in the entire world. Every year,
yeah.
When you – I don't know who puts together this list of the best beaches in the world, but La Jolla is always in the top, 5, 10 every year.
Yeah, and they got a few of them. I mean, they got the Cove. You can go and – well, they got – you know what the Cove has now? Sea lions everywhere.
I mean,
people just – tourists just line up around the block to see the sea lions.
My wife and I took a kayak trip.
Oh, did you?
Off La Jolla, and you go into those. We had a sea lion come. I mean, it looked like we were going to get capsized because the thing was bigger than our kayak.
They're enormous.
They come up right next to you, and we were told that by our little kayak guide that he was taking a group of people out one day, and a seal actually jumped up on somebody's kayak and capsized him. Because you go – when you're going out on the kayaks, he'll stop you, and you stop in the water, and he's showing you things like the fault, where the fault is there at La Jolla.
Oh, yeah, right.
The fault line there, the rocks. It's really cool looking, even though it's kind of scary. But so when you're stopped – sometime it's possible the sea lion thinks, oh, there's
a rock or
a
something.
Rock or something I can do. So
yeah, well, they got the seals down at the other end at the children's pool. That's all full of seals and sea lions won't sit together.
No.
They don't get along.
That's right. One of my kids got chased by a sea lion.
Oh, that's terrifying.
It is.
Because those guys will bite you. Sea lions will bite you.
What happened was he was messing around, got a little bit too close. I think it was Anthony. They're listening right now. They can correct me. But the thing started. He takes off running. So yikes. Don't get too close.
No, but so the Hyatt Regency is where we're staying, and it's over in that La Jolla area. Man, just a beautiful part of the world. But some of the best speakers you're ever going to hear on the idea of faith and science, and this false 19th century idea that has just taken root that there's a conflict between faith and science. It's nonsense, of course, but we need people to explain it to us. So Father Terrence Ehrman will be there, who was on last week. Stacey Trisankos, who's a wonderful guest on this show. From time to time, we're always happy when we have her. They're both going to delve into that. You'll be giving a talk on miracles in science.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And science. So science is actually the church employs science to investigate miracles.
Absolutely.
Which science, I think, is so cool.
Yeah. The key is to understand that God is the author of truth.
Yeah.
And whether it's scientific truth, historical truth, it is truth. And so the church loves truth. And this is why historically, as you know, in every area of science, Catholics have always been in the lead. And the church in particular, from Gregor Mendel and genetics to Copernicus to you name it, you have Catholics that have been in the lead. And they still are. And yet we still have this myth that says, oh, the church doesn't like science. This is completely bogus. We're going to talk about how faith and science are friends, in fact.
Yep.
And, of course, theology is the highest science, as St. Thomas Aquinas tells us. But there is never a contradiction because God is the author of all truth.
Well, we'd love to have you there. CatholicAnswersConference.com is where you can go to find out all about it. CatholicAnswersConference.com. Some rooms left, but not many. Even as I speak, they may not be left. I don't know. It's that few. 888-318-7884 is our number here. Fernando in Tulsa, Oklahoma, listening on St. Michael's Catholic Radio. You are first today with Tim Staples. Your question, Fernando.
Hey, guys. I have a wonderful friend who's part of the Assemblies of God, and she's accepted almost everything about the Catholic Church, but she's been struggling with some of the Catholic views on the end times and the millennium. So I guess my question would be, what has been infallibly defined as dogma that all Catholics are obligated to believe about the end times and the millennium?
Right. That's a great question. In the Creed, of course, we articulate the infallible teaching that we believe in the second coming of our Lord, that the Lord will come again in glory to judge the living and the dead. This is something that's been believed for 2,000 years, and what that is rooted in, of course, is texts of scriptures like 2 Thessalonians 4:16 that tells us the Lord is coming back again. But the church rejects the notion of there being, you know, a tribulation after that fact and then a thousand-year millennial reign and all of that. The church rejects that. All brands of millennialism, and that goes all the way back to the third century when Origen famously was one of those. And there were a few fathers of the church that held to a kind of millennialism, but the church rejected it. Part of what was rejected, as it was called, Originism, right? He also believed in final salvation of all and such. He was a good son of the church because these things weren't defined yet. But that really kind of charted the course for us as Catholics. And of course, biblically speaking, things like the rapture and such weren't believed by any Christian for the first 1,800 years. You know, whenever you have something that's not believed for the first 1,800 years of the Christian era, that should be a red flag. Don't buy it, right? I mean, this that was really started by Darby, the Congregationalist minister back in the 1870s, that is something that was never taught by any Christian as far as, you know, the rapture theory and such. And all that has come from that through Scofield and the Scofield Study Bible and later Hal Lindsey and now Tim LaHaye and Mr. Jenkins and so forth, and now it's become really, really popular. All of that, the idea of there being a rapture and such, is rejected by the church. The church infallibly teaches that there is the second coming of the Lord at the end of time. End. That's it. No more after it, right? So, you know, the church doesn't have a whole lot that we teach infallibly about that. In the Assemblies of God, as you know, of the 16 tenets of faith that we used to say you had to believe in order to be ordained, you had to hold to what's called the 16 tenets or the 16 fundamentals. Several of them had to do with the end times, the rapture, the millennial reign, the second coming as distinct from the rapture. And I think there may be some more there. It's been a while since I've been Assembly of God. But the church really infallibly, you know, simply holds to the second coming being at the end of time when Jesus comes and he you know, will judge everyone in the great, you know, as it's called by some, the great white throne judgment of Revelation chapter 20, and that he refers to in Matthew chapter 25. So that's basically it. You know, you don't have the church dealing with things like the rapture on a magisterial level because it's such a new thing, and it's, you know, the church doesn't say anywhere, you know, thou shalt not believe in the rapture. It's just something that contradicts our infallible understanding of the second coming.
Okay, Fernando?
Yes, awesome. Thank you, guys.
All right, brother.
Thanks for the call, Fernando. Again, open forum here at Catholic Answers Live, 888-31-TRUTH, the number. Oh, George in Sydney, Australia, listening on the Catholic Answers app, is next. It's probably, what is it? What time of day is it there in Sydney, Australia, George?
G'day, guys. It's actually quite early morning here, Wednesday morning. So we are a time ahead of you guys. So yeah,
yes.
Early Wednesday morning.
Well, don't give anything away about what happens tomorrow. All right. And your question for Tim Staples.
Thanks, guys. Also, just a bit of a preface, just to pray and hope that Tim recovers well. So
thank you.
A bit of a big fan here from Sydney, Australia for Tim Staples. So I hope you go well, Tim, my friend.
All right, brother. You know, I'm coming to Sydney this fall, right? Did you hear?
Shovel Race Peruzio, I heard.
Yes, I'm coming.
Peruzio Media?
Yeah, yep. I think I'm coming in, is it October or September? Do you know? I should know that, huh?
Honestly.
I've got a couple. You know what happens is I've got a Rome trip coming up and I've got the Australia trip and I sometimes conflate them, but I think I'm going in October. Aren't I, Erica, to Australia?
Got to ask Jen.
Jen's she should
here.
Know.
No, Erica doesn't know.
But anyway, I hope to see you when I arrive in Sydney, and then I'm heading to Perth as well. It's going to be a great trip. But what's on your mind, my brother from Dananda?
Really well. Quick one. I'm pretty sure your daughter may have asked the same thing very, very kind of an early age, but we're going through the book of Genesis, and my
yes.
young daughter, she's only, you know, 8, 9, and they're asking about the correlation between dinosaurs and Adam and Eve, and just a
yes.
big picture of, you know, how do I explain to my daughter essentially how dinosaurs fit into the Adam and Eve story, prior, post, just more of a you know, your perspective as Tim Staples and a
sure.
how would I basically explain it to my daughter essentially?
Sure, I think what you can do is help her to understand, as the Catechism of the Catholic Church teaches in paragraph 390. It says the account of the fall in Genesis 3 uses figurative language but affirms a primeval event. That's a good thing to remember. A deed that took place at the beginning of the history of man. Revelation gives us the certainty of faith that the whole of human history is marked by the original fault freely committed by our first parents. So the story in Genesis 3 and the story of the creation as well. Indeed, the first 11 chapters of Genesis use a lot of figurative language. It's not a science book, right? It's really a text where the ancient people use popular cosmological stories of the time, but God inspired the inspired authors to communicate certain essential truths in the midst of communicating that story. So, you know, it's in that context we hear Catholic scholars like Father Lawrence Boat in his, you know, Reading the Old Testament, which is a great book, talks about, you know, the use of didactic fiction here,
oh,
right?
Oh, yeah, right.
That means it's false. No, didactic fiction doesn't mean false. It means it's using a story. Jesus did that, didn't he? It was called parables,
yeah,
right?
I remember a few
a
of
lot
those.
Of people wrongly attempt to okay, Lazarus and the rich man, you know, when did they live? Are there tombs for them? No, that's a story. It's a parable that communicates certain essential truths. Now, there are certain aspects of the story that the church has told us are literal, like Adam and Eve, as the catechism says here in paragraph 390, Revelation gives us certainty of faith that the whole of human history is marked by the original fault freely committed by our first parents. And by the way, that footnote 265, say that five times.
Go for it, Tim.
Footnotes.
You sure the drugs have worn off?
Pope Pius XII and Pope Paul VI reiterating that teaching that, you know, we have two original parents, Adam and Eve, and we all of us descend from those two original parents. So there's certain things like that you want to affirm and help your daughter to understand. Now, that doesn't mean, though, that there cannot be an evolutionary process involved either. Pope Pius XII makes that clear in the very document, Humani Generis, that's footnoted here in paragraph 265. Tell you what, after the break,
more,
we'll come back and we'll put a bow on this.
Okay, hang on there for if you can through the break, and we will be right back, George, after this on Catholic Answers Live. It's open forum. Tim Staples, our guest, 888-31-TRUTH, our number.
Is the church wrong on contraception? In a culture that worships the pursuit of sexual pleasure, the Catholic Church's teaching on contraception can seem archaic and unintelligible. Its critics say it's outdated, theologically unfounded, and even harmful. And even faithful Catholics can have difficulty explaining this moral teaching. Catholic Answers is out to change all of that. That's why we've just released Trent Horn's dynamic new DVD, The Case Against Contraception. Using scripture, papal and magisterial teachings, natural law, and new insights provided by social science and medicine, Trent puts forward a compelling case for Catholic teachings with his trademark charity and persuasive graciousness. Be prepared to give a defense. Order your copy of The Case Against Contraception today by calling 1-888-291-8000, logging on to the shop at Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Hi, this is Cy Kellett. Have you ever noticed that people only use the word spectacular in an ad? Well, we have a spectacular online event going on right now. It's our store-wide summer sale, which includes savings of 10 to 25% and more in some cases on every book, tract, CD, DVD, ebook, and MP3 we carry, including all the newest resources from my good friends Tim Staple, Jimmy Akin, Trent Horn, and Carlo Broussard. With lower prices and a great summer selection, it is by far the most spectacular online Catholic summer sale. So log on now and all this month to the shop at shop.catholic.com and take advantage of our very special prices. You know it's all good stuff because it's from the people you know and trust at Catholic Answers.
Looking for an on-fire Catholic speaker for your event? Catholic Answers speakers will inform and inspire your audience to grow in their Catholic faith. For more information on booking a Catholic Answers speaker, visit CatholicAnswersSpeakers.com today.
I'm Tom Price.
And I'm Gloria Purvis. Tomorrow, Father Vincent DeRosa.
Along with Dr. Richard Fitzgibbons talking about gender dysphoria. Join us for Morning Glory, 7 a.m. Eastern on EWTN Radio.
Now back to Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I'm Cy Kellett, your host. Our guest is Tim Staples. Our caller is calling from Sydney, Australia. George, down in Sydney, Australia. And you couldn't remember if you're going to Sydney, Australia in September or October. So I want to read you a note from a woman on Facebook. She says, October, baby. You're going to Sydney in October.
And that was from my wife.
Yes, that's the only person that gets to call you baby on the internet, I think.
Yes.
I'm not going to try it. I can tell you that. All right. So George was asking about Adam and Eve.
Yes.
You wanted to continue that.
Yeah. And George, you know, to get to the specifics of your question, what we need to do is understand there are parameters in which Catholics, you know, can agree and disagree, as long as we keep it between the lines, as it said.
Okay.
Within the parameters. And Pope Pius XII gave us a good sort of sense of those parameters in the great encyclical Humani Generis of 1950, where he says it is it's licit for Catholics to teach that it's possible. This isn't, you know, you don't have to teach this, but this is permitted for Catholics to teach that there could be an evolutionary process behind what we see in Genesis. Genesis is not, again, a scientific textbook. And I know I tend to say, George, like to my kids who are listening right now, hi, kids, that, you know, if you take the second creation story in Genesis 2, right, where God forms Adam from the slime of the earth. Now, could that forming be over a million years? Certainly that's possible. Now, again, you don't want to insert, you know, a scientific – well, actually, what the inspired author meant was that God was forming. No, that's not it. But it certainly fits in the story. If we understand, God could have formed man over millions of years in that and used either literal – God could use literal clay if God wanted to, or he could use, you know, a pre-human animate matter, right? Yeah. But here's the key, George, you want to communicate to your children that at some point God breathed the soul into whether it's clay or whether it was a pre-human being, but it wasn't human until God breathed the soul into that clay or that being. That's when it became human. That's when the human body became a human body. That's when the human soul became a human soul. And that's when you had a human person, not before. That's a very important point because at that point, something dramatic happened. I argue a miracle happened bodily, but, you know, we could talk more about that. Now, the last thing is when it comes to the dinosaurs and such. Certainly, if you use that, let's go back to the first creation story. We have multiple days of creation, right? And I think pretty much nobody left in Catholic circles. Yes, you do have some who still want to hold to a literal 24-hour period. You know, the Colby Center, I believe, is one such. But they are so much in the minority now. I mean, generally speaking, we understand what Origen said in the 3rd century. The days are not literal days. What St. Augustine said in the 5th century in the City of God, he says it's obvious that the inspired author did not intend it to be, you know, 7 24-hour periods of time because the sun wasn't created, sun and moon, till the 4th day. And you need the sun in order to have a day. So obviously, this is not intended to be strict 24-hour periods of time. And so certainly there can be an evolutionary process. And isn't it something how in the first creation story you do have the lower forms being created first and then higher, 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 which kind of fits with an evolutionary model. And again, it's not there because, you know, that the inspired author knew that of evolution. No, it's I'm just saying it certainly fits in that model. But most importantly, we know, and George, I'll tell you something else that a lot of folks miss here. There are a lot of folks who think, you know, that there was no death and Adam and Eve, you know, they didn't eat animals and there was no, animals didn't die until Adam and Eve sinned. That's a mistake, right? Genesis is not about how animals die. Genesis is about how sin was introduced and death entered into the human experience. Okay, dinosaurs were around 65 million years before us. There was all kind of death long before Adam and Eve. And so we have to understand properly there are certain aspects of Genesis where folks get it wrong in saying, you know, there was no death. And then you run into what we talked about earlier. You have a conflict between science and faith, and that's unfortunate, but it's not really a conflict. It's because some folks are not teaching the faith properly understanding what Genesis is all about. So as long as you get those general parameters, George, and you help your kids to understand, look, God's creation is glorious. He has, you know, he created all things in the beginning. He guides his creation over this long process. It appears some sense of an evolutionary process. And George, that's a fun topic to get into with your kids because there's all sorts of problems with the evolutionary model. I mean, you just look at the Cambrian explosion, for example, where virtually every phyla that exists today came into being in pop. In evolutionary terms, kind of a pop, you know, over a few million years or even less than that, a few hundred thousand years, which is, whoa, how do you explain that? I mean, there are all sorts of questions. But see, as Catholics, we should be excited about it and dive into it and study and be a problem. Don't just give in to the evolutionary model and absolute Darwinian sort of model. Challenge it, because we know that truth is truth, and we can rejoice in truth. And so we want to get at the truth. We should not be, you know, beholden to any model of science, certainly, that would contradict anything with regard to our faith.
Okay, George?
Really well said. Thank you, Tim, and God bless, and see you in Sydney, Australia.
Okay, brother. Year. God bless you, George.
Bye, George. Okay, I got to ask this. I know I got another question for you then. The Jurassic Park movie, it's a big deal now, right?
Yes.
Okay, so the dinosaurs died 65
I'm sick
million
of them.
Years. You're sick of
Would
them?
Would you stop making the Jurassic Park? It's over, people.
I didn't make any of them. I had nothing to do with it.
Yes.
I'm just saying, like, if they could do that, is there a moral objection to bringing a dinosaur back?
No, not everything that's stupid is immoral. You know,
so you're saying
that doesn't mean that the church could not interject and such. But no, there's certainly nothing in our Catholic teaching that says you can't, you know, clone a dog, cat, bird, bat, or dinosaur.
Okay. All right.
But like I said, it would be really stupid. And learn from that much we can learn from the Jurassic Park movies, right? Don't do it. Yes.
You think that T-Rex would get out? Is that what you're – Are you pretty sure?
I don't think you have a big enough leash to hold them.
No, you know, that's probably
if
true.
You're walking your T-Rex.
They're going to bring the mastodons back, though, or mammoths.
Oh, sure. That would be fun.
Yeah, because they didn't die that long ago.
Just really big elephants.
Yeah, big hairy elephants. Yeah. That's what we need, some big hairy elephants. Rhiannon in
– But it's not even clear if they can actually do that. I mean, there's – There are some really well-preserved mastodons, so some people are kind of excited about the notion. But we will see, won't we, Cy Kelly?
But what about crossing a mastodon with a T-Rex? Come on, Tim. Like, no?
All right. How about a mastodon with a mouse? Would that be interesting?
It would be scared of itself. Rhiannon in Nebraska, watching on YouTube. Thanks for waiting, Rhiannon. Your question for Tim.
Sure. Hi. Thank you for taking my call. It's probably going to be kind of a weird question, but I've met a lot of Torah observant, quote unquote, Christians, but I don't think they call themselves that. Yeah, and they're super sweet. I'm like part of a couple Facebooks, and a lot of the women I like to head cover, and they do, and they fake and all the sweet things. But anyway, that might sound silly, but I'm trying to understand, like, if a Catholic wanted to be a Torah observant, I'm not saying I do. But if they wanted to, and like things like following the feast days and the Sabbath and like no pork and things like that, would that be kind of like going against the fulfillment that Christ brought?
Right.
Or would that be fine? Because a lot of them are very, like, I don't want to say they're anti-Catholic, but kind of, because they think, I guess, that we changed everything. And
yes.
So I'm just trying to get a good understanding about it.
Sure. Here's the key. From the beginning, the church has always said, in fact, this goes right back to St. Paul himself, back to the First Council of Jerusalem in Acts chapter 15. In the early church, there were many Jewish Christians who didn't quite convert all the way, right? They were still holding on to some of their Judaism, and they were, you know, we commonly refer to them now as Judaizers. A lot of what St. Paul wrote, his letter to the Galatians, to the Romans, and the inspired author, whoever it was who wrote Hebrews, the whole book is all about this problem of these Jewish converts who were saying, hey, it's great that you believe in Jesus, but you also got to go back to the Old Testament. And at the time, the temple was still standing, so you had to go to the temple, you had to offer sacrifice, you had to circumcise and all of that. For salvation. And that would be the sort of defining matter, because St. Paul himself was not opposed to, nor was the church, doing certain of these things. I mean, in Acts chapter 21, of course, where is that? Right around verse 3, in first few verses there, he has Timothy circumcised. That, tell me that God doesn't have a sense of humor to put that story in the book of Acts. But, you know, as you may know, Paul was causing quite a stir and saying no to the Torah and yes to the gospel. And so people wanted to kill him. And so Timothy, whose mother was a Jew, his father was a Greek, because his mother was a Jew, hey, what's up with this? He's not circumcised. Timothy, Paul had him circumcised just so they wouldn't kill him, number one, but to say that, look, we don't have a problem with this. It's just teaching that it's necessary for salvation. That's where Paul drew the line, and that's where in Galatians chapter 5, verses 1 through 4, for example, he says, you are fallen from grace, you who are teaching that, you know, circumcision and such is necessary for salvation. You have fallen from grace. So the idea of, you know, practicing some Jewish things and whatnot is not illicit, but believing that it has anything to do with salvation is. And if you start binding other Catholics to it, that's where you step over the line. I think the bottom line for us in helping folks, you know, Seventh-day Adventists, you find a little of this, and there are various different sects that say you have to keep certain, you know, and there's different sects that have different things. Like Seventh-day Adventists will say, well, you have to keep the kosher laws because kosher laws go back before actually the law of Moses. And, you know, things like that. The Ten Commandments, for example, they will say, you know, we're bound by the Ten Commandments, which they say includes the Sabbath, as distinct from, say, Levitical law or ceremonial law that's passed away, right? So there's all sorts of fine distinctions here. But here's the key that you want to point out to folks. According to the New Testament, the law is gone. The old covenant is no longer binding on Christians for salvation. And by the way, that includes the Ten Commandments in as much, I love the way that Catechism of the Council of Trent puts it. We don't follow the Ten Commandments because Moses told us to. And by the way, that's clearly what St. Paul teaches in 2 Corinthians 3, verse 7. He says, now, if the dispensation of death carved in letters on stone came with such splendor that the Israelites could not look at Moses' face because of its brightness, fading as this was, will not the dispensation of the Spirit be attended with even greater splendor? So notice, yes, when Charlton Heston got the Ten Commandments on the mountain and his face is glowing, all of that, Paul says, fading as that was, it's gone. We have a new Moses. We have a new law, right? Hebrews chapter 7, verses 11 and 12. If perfection comes through the Levitical priesthood, what further need was there that another priest should arise and be called after the order of Melchizedek and not after the order of Aaron? For where there is a change of priesthood, there is a change of law. Folks have to understand, we are under the law of Christ. 1 Corinthians 9:21, St. Paul tells us, we're under the law of Christ. Galatians 6, 1 and 2, the law of Christ, folks. Are we almost out of time here? But here's the bottom line. We're under the law of Christ. Hebrews or Romans chapter 8 says it as well. But here's the key. The law of Christ includes the natural law, which is what the Ten Commandments are, the natural law written in stone, minus what day we worship. See, the Sabbath is a ceremonial component stuck in the Ten Commandments. This is why St. Paul would say in Colossians 2:16, let no one judge you with regard to meat or drink or with regard to festivals, that is the yearly Sabbaths, the new moons, the monthly holy days, or the Sabbaths, which is the Sunday Sabbath. These things are but a shadow. The substance is of Christ. These have passed away. The inspired author of Hebrews in chapter 10 will say the same thing concerning all of the law. It's but a shadow. It's passed away. The substance is Christ. So we're under the law that is the law of Christ, which includes, yes, the Ten Commandments. Jesus said so, quoting, you know, thou shalt not commit adultery and kill and so forth. Yes, we're under that law, but only because it is what Paul describes in Romans 2:14 as the natural law written on the heart. Not because it is the dispensation of death carved in letters of stone. And why does he call it a dispensation of death, the Ten Commandments and the law in the Old Testament? Because we couldn't keep it. apart from grace. We couldn't keep it. See, the law came by Moses, John chapter 1 tells us, but grace and truth comes through Jesus Christ. Very important that we understand this, folks, that we have a new law, and that's what you want to emphasize to your friend, and the old law has passed away. Remember 2 Corinthians chapter 3, verses 6 and 7, Hebrews chapter 7, verses 11 and 12, Romans chapter 7, especially 7 and following there, St. Paul makes very clear that the old law is gone and we have a new law in Jesus Christ. That's what you want to emphasize.
Rhiannon, thank you very, very much for that call. We got a lot of calls to go to, though, so I'm going to keep moving. I hope that that was helpful to you. That's I wonder if Rhiannon, I probably should have asked her, expected quite how deep that goes, because it goes to the very foundations of what it means to be a Christian, that the law of love, the law of the gospel is the law.
Amen.
And any other law.
And, you know, and that includes the law of the church. Because Jesus tells us, you know, in Matthew 18, 15 through 18, if we have a fight with each other, we go to each other, we try to sell it, we take one or two, we still can't sell it, we take it to the church. And the one who fails to hear the church is to be as a heathen and a publican, for whatever the church binds on earth is bound in heaven. There Jesus tells all of us we're also bound to follow the law of the church. Hence you have the introduction of a new calendar, holy days, and so forth. Yeah. We are bound to follow as Christians.
I'm really glad Rhiannon asked that question. Hey, Tim's book, Behold Your Mother, A Biblical and Historical Defense of the Marian Doctrines, is one of the many things on sale right now at the store-wide summer sale at shop.catholic.com.
Is my book Nuts and Bolts on sale too?
Yes. Almost all of the books, Tim, audio, DVD, tracks, and digital products are on sale. Tell me if this makes sense to you. 10 to 25% off. And more.
Wow.
That doesn't seem like it. It seems like 10 to something else off. 10 to 25% and more.
And more.
That seems.
Wow. That means some things are really seriously.
Yeah, right.
Wow. 50% maybe?
Look, I got all these DVDs that you made and CDs. Catholics in the Culture War, Defending Your Faith, New Eve, Mediatrix and Mother. The Shocking Truth About the Pope and the Church Fathers. Yes, it is shocking. Tim Staples versus Greg, your debates that went on for a week.
And I got about 20 more.
Yeah. they're all stacked up here just so I could let people know everything's on sale.
Amen,
at shop.catholic.com. Go there. No promo code. Just shop. Hundreds of great resources on sale.
DVDs, CDs, books. It's all there.
Yeah. Even tracts.
Tracts.
Tracts. We'll be right back after this on Catholic Answers Live.
Catholic Answers Live with Tim Staples is coming right back.
EWTN, communicating the faith.
I feel that God has been really doing a work in me in the last 5-10 years. I'm a convert to Catholicism, and I started to just really feel a passion to know more about the Catholic faith, and I started listening to Catholic radio all day. I'm not doing great things, but I'm doing small things with great love.
EWTN. Live truth. Live Catholic.
Do you want to end abortion? Halt the attack on traditional marriage and ensure religious freedom for ourselves and for our grandchildren? To do this, we must convert the culture. St. Paul Street Evangelization is a grassroots initiative that recognizes this need and takes it to the streets. If you're interested in peacefully sharing the gospel in your area, visit streetevangelization.com to learn more.
Call now with your question, 888-318-7884. This is Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Tim Staples, our guest both hours. Tim is Director of Apologetics and Evangelization here at Catholic Answers, and prolific author, speaker, DVD and CD maker, all these things. It is a little workshop in his basement there. He's making new DVDs and CDs all the time. All those are on sale.
That's right.
We go now to Angel in Anaheim. Angel in Anaheim, that's weird because the Angels play in Anaheim. I wonder if he was named after the baseball team. Watching on Facebook Live, Angel, were you named after the baseball team?
No, I was not.
No. All right. Well, I took a shot. Your question for Tim?
But I am a fan, though.
Everybody in Anaheim
is. The question I... the question I have for Tim is there any evidence or any Catholic teaching that Lucifer was an angel that was in charge of music in heaven? The reason I'm asking this is because I was reading some books from Father Gabriel Armitt and how he explains how the youth is being taken away from the truth, from our faith, with music, and how that influences a lot.
Right, right. Yeah, it's interesting. What you have biblically in both Isaiah chapter 14, beginning at verse 12, and Ezekiel 28, also beginning at verse 12, you get some insight into Lucifer. He was, of course, an angel, created good, as were all the angels. Some bickering as to exactly what choir of angel he was in. Some say an archangel. Some say he was a cherub. Cherubim, one of the cherubim, St. Thomas Aquinas, for example, mentions that, and I tend to go with that because you do see that in Ezekiel. Or is that Ezekiel 28 or Isaiah 14? One of the two refers to him as a covering cherub, right?
Oh, yeah.
In the presence of God. And you also see the language of your pipes were built into you from the time of your creation. And some folks pull out of that. He was the you're kind of a worship leader in heaven. Dad, you don't want to go there because these are just, you know, inspired authors using imagery. It's all you can do because we're describing the indescribable. We can't describe a pure spirit being, right?
Right. Yeah.
Except by using material things that you and I understand. So no, Lucifer was not leading, you know, instruments. They weren't playing pianos and such in heaven. They're pure spirit beings. But certainly, if he was a cherub among the cherubim, this is the second highest choir of angels who are worshiping God in ways you and I can't even fathom, right? Now, he never attained to the beatific vision, mm-hmm. but before he would have made his choice for or against God, and we know he chose against God, he had abilities, and he still has abilities that far surpass ours because he is a pure spirit being. So having said all of that, even though, you know, I think folks go too far, especially in Protestant circles, when they say, you know, he led music in heaven. You'll actually hear that and read that. He led the music worship in heaven, and so now he distorts it. That's not true, but they're on to something. And I think this gets at the heart of our caller's question. They're on to something in that music is so important, it's so integral to our worship of God, that this is something Lucifer despises. Can you imagine how he despises the worship of God at the holy sacrifice of the Mass?
Right, yes.
You know, Gregorian chant or any high form of worship or songs at a normal Mass that are sung beautifully to our Lord. I mean, it doesn't have to be Gregorian chant. Any music done well, ordered and directed to Almighty God, Lucifer hates. And so there is no doubt about it, my friend. Lucifer loves to distort music, and he does it in our culture. His spirit, I believe, is behind so much of the just awful, how do you describe it other than awful music that we have with lyrics that are so debased and such.
Debased, right.
Some of the demonic stuff that is out there glorifying every manner of sin and glorifying anything but God. I mean, if you can't see the demonic in that, then you're living under a rock, folks. The devil definitely attacks. And this is, I would argue, this is why we need folks like, you know, Chris Check, one of his kids, has a little band.
Yeah.
You know, and they play good. You know, I'm not one of these rock and roll is an evil form of music. I know I have friends who believe that. You're wrong, but hey, you know, I get that, and we can agree to disagree as Catholic Christians, but I believe we need to enter into the heart of rock and roll and use it for God's glory and to lift up the culture, right? Everything doesn't have to be immediately and absolutely directed to God. It can be good folk songs. Come on, I'm a Carpenters fan.
Carpenter. Oh, Karen Carpenter. What a singer she was.
Her voice was angelic.
It was angelic. That's a good
description. But, you know, not just the Carpenters, but, you know, we need to take back culture. We've been kicked out of the culture, you know, in our country, in the Western world. We need to take it back. And music is one of the most important ways to do it. Socrates said you can, if you want to destroy a culture, destroy its music.
A great question, Angel. Thanks very much for that. Thanks for the call from Anaheim. Tim and I are on top of the world looking down on creation. And the only explanation I can find.
That's right. Is the love that I found. All right, we better stop this now.
Quoting the Carpenters. We'll take a quick break. We'll be back. Hey, if you're on the line, stay on the line. If you haven't called yet, 888-31-TRUTH is the number. It's open forum. Whether you're Catholic or not, you are welcome. With any question you might have on the life, the faith, the history of the Catholic Church. Right back with more of that after this on Catholic Answers Live.